and welcome to our show. This is the Pet Savant Unleashed. So today we're going to talk about behavior. The reason we're doing this is I've had so many calls of late, and you know, I always get these calls. I get calls from people from years and years ago, and then I get people who it's their first dog, and we get people who are looking for a service dog, or they want to turn their dog into a therapy dog. Every different walk of life you can imagine. We have people who have potbelly pigs, or horses, or cats, or sugar gliders, or gerbils, hamsters, rabbits, you name it. And one thing that is consistent throughout behavior, in my opinion, is what we do and what's required for each individual case, what each family is capable of, and what each animal is capable of. And I want to also talk about how do you know when your training is working and who to go to? Because honestly, not everybody needs somebody like me who can go in there and fix an aggressive dog that's bitten multiple people. A lot of times, you don't need that. And if you have an animal like that, and we're going to go into this later, it might not be the right situation. You might need more. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with going through the process. But I want to go through what that process is today. Because most people will reach out to somebody either too early or too late. And the reason I say too early, because it's really never too early to reach out to an expert, but you may not need that. And there are a lot of people out there who call themselves one thing, but really aren't. There are people who, one family I remember in Texas with two very aggressive Weimaraners, yes, Weimaraners, about probably 110 pounds apiece, which is also bizarre, but had with multiple bite histories, even attacked a police officer when he went in to check out the dogs and evaluate them. Well, I got to take care of those two dogs, and I did fix them. But I'm going to explain to you as we continue our show today what causes things and what's involved, because it's not so simple as to say, my dog, you know, is growling at my kid, so give him more space. That's not the way to go. By the time you've got that, you've got an issue. So let's talk about what I call behavioral protocol order. Behavior is different than obedience, okay? We all, when we were kids especially, we had a dog. We could teach that dog to do all kinds of things for a cookie. That's operant conditioning. So operant conditioning is not difficult at all. And it's pretty easy to find, you know, a decent trainer, like a local person who, you know, doesn't have an extensive knowledge, but has worked with, you know, maybe 100 dogs, if that. But you do have to look at people when you hire somebody. You can generally, yes, you check references, of course, but generally speaking, the best way to do it is to see what you feel. Most people's perception and intuition is good enough on those things. If your animal runs away from that person, even if they haven't even looked at it, but that animal runs away, even if your animal's a little bit skittish, the animal should look at the trainer as being a positive influence, should be somebody who he feels comfortable and confident. If you bring your animal somewhere, first of all, don't leave your animal for a board and train until you've tried other things. If you have, which I have had a number of times because of what I do and the intensity of the behaviors that I deal with and fix, you have to understand something. If your problem exists at your home, sending your dog away to somebody who's going to use a shock collar, which is 9 times out of 10 what they do, or some other kind of punitive, aversive form of punishment, that is not going to change your dog at your home unless you continue that aversive, which means very negative type of quote-unquote training. So let me explain to you first what operant conditioning versus aversive training is. Operant conditioning is like I did with my pup, Charcoal, who is a Scottish Terrier. When I was 7 years old, we got him. He was kind of a little poophead because he was a Scotty. They have a lot of attitude. And that was my personal first dog that I ever had. But I had a connection with him. So My dad gave me a bunch of treats. We used to use things I wouldn't even use now because they had wheat and garbage in them. But we didn't know, right? You learn as you go on. That's why, you know, listen to your parents and listen to your grandparents because they've already been there where you guys started. So I remember taking paper plates and cutting the paper plates and making little chutes, almost like a little train track with a little hollowed out area in the middle. And I stapled it all together. I think I probably used, you know, 5,000 or 6,000 staples on this thing. My poor dad lost his stapler for probably 3 weeks that was on his desk. So he reverted to paper clips at that point. But it was really a funny time because I didn't know. My dad said, here, hold up the treat and get the behavior or get the movement you want. Ask him to do what you want, the actual task, if you would. And then when he does it, give him a cookie. So I said, that seems easy enough. Well, I trained my dog to actually, this is a Scotty, 25 pounds maybe. I trained them to get up on a ladder. This was after the end. This was in probably 2 months. Get up on a ladder with a treat in his mouth, put the treat into the top of this contraption that, you know, was just a crazy thing. And he put that up there, and then it would slide down the little chute. It landed on a little plate. The little plate tipped something else. That thing that tipped something else put the cookie into a different place. And eventually, you know, a minute or two later, this cookie came out at the very bottom. And this was a whole contraption using my dining room table, chairs. I mean, nobody could use the dining room for sure for quite a while because I had this contraption in there. So the funniest part of it was when it was like if anybody knows Rube Goldberg, it was Rube Goldberg kind of thing. It was just crazy. So, you know, it was great because he would hold the treat, put the treat in for himself. And then at the bottom, he would look at me and he'd wait and I'd say, okay, Charky, because that's what we used to call him. And Charky would grab the treat and then we would do it again. So it was really amazing that what I could do at 7 with a box of treats. And I'm not saying that I'm the only one who could do something like that or be that creative, but I tried and I didn't even know what operant conditioning was. I tried it. And guess what? For those things, man, it worked great. It was amazing because he was food motivated, the dog. He didn't have any aggression in him, even though he was a kind of a little bit of a pain in the butt with certain things. And it was fun. You know, it was a great thing. And it's great for your kids. Give them a job to do and say, hey, see if you can train the dog. And this is training, not teaching. See if you can train the dog with operant conditioning, which is, I call it quid pro quo, because it's basically like you tell your kid in school, if you get a good grade, I'll give you something. So it's basically bribery to get the results you want, which is totally fine, but it has its purpose. It has its uses and its functions. So operant conditioning is fine to train a dog to sit or lie down or roll over or, you know, even, you know, pottying when you're training them housebreaking. It's also great if the dog won't come and you can train them to come with food. So all those are not really behaviors. People call them behaviors, but they're really not. They're body positions. And changing a body position for food it's fun, right? It's a good connection with your dog. But the problem is, what do you do when you start realizing that, you know, your dog is growling at your toddler when your toddler goes near his food bowl or near a toy or near you or whatever? That is not something that the average person, and if you've had dogs your whole life, because everyone always said, I've had dogs my whole life, you are still the average person. You are not a behaviorist, and you should not be messing with, once you start getting signs, even nonverbal signs, you know, even a dog who's posturing, who's kind of, you know, raising his hackles or standing very stiffly, their tail is kind of stiff and all that. That still is not something that is in your skill set unless you have been training, you know, a very tough breed and met many of them, not just because you had one dog or you've had dogs your whole life, which means you maybe had three in your life. You are not an expert after three. Maybe after three marriages and divorces you become an expert, but not after three dogs. Dogs are really complex animals. And the other thing about that is, when you're working with your dog, you have a bond, you have a connection, you have a history. So what tends to happen, and I've seen this in my practice for years, decades, is people think, and that's the problem, people think, well, I can do it because I've had dogs my whole life, okay? But that's not a good excuse. That's like saying, well, my heart's been beating my whole life, so I have a problem with my heart. I don't need a doctor because my heart's been beating just fine. But you do need a specialist. If it were your health, you would certainly reach out for a specialist or at least go to a local general practitioner, family medicine, right? So that's what I'm saying. Going through like a good basic obedience course is fun. You can go to one of the box stores. You can go to some local trainer. But that's all fine. But these are people who are, I'm not going to say trained, but are proficient in operant conditioning, which has its functions. Nothing wrong with it. And it's always fine to start out that way, and it's actually preferable because you always want to start out with the smallest possible change and the kindest possible change. So if a dog is giving you a problem because it won't come in and you can get it to come in with food, that's great. Perfect. Use operant conditioning. Use obedience. That's terrific. But the problem is, what do you do when the dog won't come in because it's afraid and it won't take food? Or the dog won't come in because it's afraid and it's growling or posturing? That is not something that you should be handling on your own. Because if it got to that point already, it means that you were not capable of preventing it. Okay, so we're not talking about, you know, no, you don't know anything about dogs. But it's like having, you know, you can have three children and think you know everything about parenting. But then you meet somebody with a special needs child with maybe with autism or with PDD-NOS or anything, any other condition. And suddenly you're like, whoa, I don't know how to handle that. Exactly. And there's nothing wrong, there's nothing shameful about your not being able to handle something because you've had dogs your whole life. You haven't had that dog, you haven't been the person you are in that moment. The last time you trained your dog, you might have been 22 years old and running 5 miles a day and taking the dog out for a run. And now you're 50. You're definitely not going out for those runs anymore. Or if you are, you probably aren't listening to the show because your dog's perfect. But you have to remember, it's like E.E. Cummings, the very famous, you can't step into the same river twice. And people will say things like, you know, for instance, you know, let's say, okay, I'm good at this because I've done it before, but you haven't done it with that dog and you haven't done it before. So if you want, you can definitely try that out, but the key is really very different than that. The key is making sure that you know how to handle that moment with that animal, because you can't step into the same river twice. You have different water molecules that are going to be touching you. You have leaves that weren't there. You have maybe a fish or a bug or something like that. And that's all part of learning and knowledge of how to, you know, basically get your dog to follow you in a new moment, or get that new dog to follow you in that new moment. So it really, really does matter what you do and how you start out. Now, some people will start out with one of these crazy chains like the Australian people, or, you know, from New Zealand. And listen, I got great friends in Australia and one in New Zealand. But I'm not going to say that those are training methods that I would necessarily follow. I would never use a shock collar. I know some people do, and that's okay if that's what you want for your dog, and your dog, you feel that you've exhausted all possibilities with all the kinds of training and behavioral modifications that are out there. But I get very skeptical when people use a shock collar, because the shock collar is like yelling because you had nothing else to say to convince somebody otherwise. It's like the politicians, the ones who are against, the ones who are, you know, loved or doing things. And then you have suddenly somebody who says, oh, well, you know, I'm going to, you know, try to kill this person, or I'm going to, you know, try to, you know, torment this person. That's not the way to do it. It's just not. You always want to do it logically, sensibly, and from your brain, not necessarily always from your heart, but from your brain. So what tends to happen, unfortunately, is you get into these people who are throwing things at the dogs, like a bicycle chain inside of a packet, little like a almost like a frisbee kind of thing, a dog frisbee, but it's got like some heavy things in it, and you're not supposed to throw it at the dog, you're throwing it toward the dog. Well, if I'm the dog and you're not a really great pitcher and you throw it, if you're CC Sabathia, you're throwing it toward the dog. If you're not, and you're, you know, not the greatest athlete, and now you're throwing it and you hit the dog, or whatever you're doing, you're scaring the dog. If somebody throws something toward you or at you, what really is the difference? The answer is nothing. There's no difference. So you don't want to throw things at a dog. You don't want to yell at a dog. You don't want to squirt them with things. All you're doing is making it worse. Now the dog doesn't trust you on top of the behavior. Now, who are you to correct him? He's afraid of you. It's like being abusive to a child and beating them or yelling at them emotionally or physically. And then you try to tell them to do something. They're not going to do it because they want to. They're not going to do it because they respect you. They're doing it out of fear. And that's what many people push a dog into, this just crazy frenzy of, you better do what I say. That's abuse. If that were with people, you'd be in prison. If you did that with a child, you did that with a spouse or another person in your family or an other person, you know, outside the family, think about it. That's crazy. Throwing things, shocking them, giving them an electric shock. Oh, I'm sorry. It's only a vibration. No, it's a shock. It's electricity. If it's not electricity, why do you have to charge it? Why do you need to have a battery in it? I know the things that don't require electricity, you don't need to plug in somewhere. You don't need to have batteries. So there you go. Just saying. Okay. I would run from anybody who says that. If you have a dog that's that bad, I'm going to give you a little hierarchy right after the break of what to do first. Stay tuned. I will be right back. And welcome back. We are home from our break. As promised, we are going to talk about how to rehabilitate your dog. This isn't a thing that you're going to be able to listen to an hour show and you're going to be perfect at, or even good at, or proficient at. But it is something that's going to help you in your journey to know what to do. So the first thing is, maybe there's something physical. Well, a lot of dogs have issues where either, especially from dogs that come from large litters or that came from a place that they didn't have good nutrition prenatal or postnatal. And what happens is they're hungry. So a dog who's stealing food might not be trying to be bad. He may just genuinely be hungry. Those ladies who are out there, if you've ever had a baby, you might have craved things. And I should probably be talking to your husbands because they remember what you craved at 4 a.m. better than you even do. But why did you crave that food? Why did you crave something you've never even eaten? Like the lady I told you about many, many weeks ago who was a lifelong vegan. And during each of her pregnancies, one, she craved charcoal grilled cheeseburgers. And the other pregnancy, she craved Sevrette hot dogs. Crazy things from somebody who didn't even know what meat or cheese tasted like. Well, her older son loved cheeseburgers and her younger son loved hot dogs. Go figure. When you are craving something, it's that you're missing something. And listen, we all crave things, right? We crave things even without being pregnant. When you're craving something, typically it's your body screaming out and saying, I need the nutrients that are in that particular food. So, of course, when you're pregnant, the intensity is much more because that baby inside of you developing is screaming, I need more carbon, I need more calcium, so, you know, or I need more protein, so I crave a charcoal broiled cheeseburger because it's got carbon, protein, and cheese and dairy in it. So you can understand that a lot of times, especially dogs who have behavioral issues revolving around food, food is oftentimes a trigger because the dog is protecting what it perceives, what it covets. I always say, thou shalt not covet. It's not that they want it, it's that they covet it. And if you don't know what the word covet means, you probably haven't read a Bible or been in a church or synagogue or anything in a long time, because that's part of the Ten Commandments. It's actually, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's belongings, nor shall you covet the neighbor's wife. Coveting is taking something that's not yours, and it's almost like an unhealthy type of feeling. So I always say that a lot of times dogs will covet something. They protect it. They take it. They want it. They're almost stealing it. And that can be because they're not absorbing nutrients, because a lot of times when dogs come from bad upbringing from the beginning, regardless of what it is now, they didn't get enough nutrition. Mama was under stress when they first were inside of mama during gestation of 63 days that takes to make a dog, make a puppy, grow one inside a mama dog. But also because a lot of times when there's a very large litter, even if the mama dog is a good dog who was, you know, at a good reputable, you know, show breeder, or is at a good place where somebody took care of that dog from the very beginning, from 2 months before she was even pregnant, you can still have a problem, because if you have a very large litter and you don't watch and you don't sleep in that whelping box and make sure that that first 24 to 36 hours that all of those puppies got enough colostrum, you can have some of the puppies who are later after birth order, if let's say the female has, you know, let's say eight nipples and can produce milk out of them, and there's 12 puppies, you can see that four of them, and it may not be the different four, it may be the same four or the same two, they may have problems getting that enough, you know, of the colostrum. So what happens is those puppies can grow up with nutritional issues where they're always stealing food. Not that they want to, it's that they need to. So that's where you can get vitamin supplements and things like that. I use something called NuVet, N-U-V-E-T, NuVet.com. I love that stuff. You can tell them you saw it on the show. I think there's an order code that you can use for 15% discount called, I don't know, I can't remember the name, but it's, I believe the number is 86686. You can write that down or you can email in, but 86686. You can get those, and this is something that every dog really needs. It's like giving your kids multivitamins. So that's a really good product, because what it does is it gives the dogs, everything is proteinated and chelated, so the proteins, the amino acids are all broken down into their smallest absorbable form. The minerals are chelated, which it looks like weird, C-H-E-L-A-T-E-D, chelated, meaning it's broken down. So where, you know, maybe your lab or your golden's going to go outside and grab a rock that's got a little bit of, you know, copper in it or whatever it needs, but it chews a piece of rock or licks the rock, that is, even though it's the right thing, it's not broken down into an absorbable form. A lot of dogs have nutritional issues, which you don't even realize. But if your dog is overly food motivated, you should definitely consider using NuVet. If your dog is getting overly protective of food, why would you use something to reinforce or reward that aggression or that bad behavior by giving them food, right? You're using the trigger as a reward, and that is never good. Never use the trigger as a reward. If your dog is being aggressive with around food, or is being kind of, like we say, bad dog around food, or you can't trust them, you have to lock them away, you can't, you know, have food out on the counter because they'll counter surf, those kind of things, that's telling me there's something physical. Which brings me to the next of our many topics this morning, health first. When you have an animal with a behavioral issue, and I'm not talking a training issue that your dog, you know, your dog won't sit. Because really, I don't think I've ever had somebody call me and say, hey, oh, I love this. Oh, Janice, I love this this particular dog. Because you know what he does? My dog, he is the best dog in the world. But I'm going to give him up, or I need you to come out, because he won't sit for a cookie. I don't think those words have ever been spoken. So it's not a matter of training, because you can train a dog, but behavior is behavior. Behavior is a totally different thing. It's not something that is going to be changed with a cookie. That's operant conditioning. Very, very minor behaviors, you may be able to have an impact, but you're definitely not going to be able to fix a behavior with a cookie. If you could, there wouldn't be a behaviorist out there, and there wouldn't be anything other than cookies. You wouldn't have people. You just grab a treat pouch, as you've seen a lot of people. I call it sometimes obedience through obesity. You see a dog like a lab or something that's, 20 pounds overweight and looks kind of like a pot-belly pig. But the dog is like that because he's good. He's well-mannered, but he's looking at food for everything. And I don't want my dog to look at me as a Pez dispenser. Remember those of you who are young enough to remember Pez and that little dispenser and the head pops up and the little Pez candy comes out? That's what some of you guys look like with the treat bags. So if you need, it's fine when you're training them, but you shouldn't be walking around the world with a treat bag, because there's going to be a time you don't have a treat. And what's going to happen? Your dog's going to run into traffic because you didn't bribe him to come to you. Teach them behavior like you teach your kids. Please, thank you. Can I help you? Can I help the little old lady across the street? Things like that. Those are not obedience. Those are behaviors. And behaviors can't be taught. Major behaviors can't be taught by using the trigger or bribery. They have to be taught with logic and by somebody who is a professional. So in my career, which I won't tell you how many years it is, but it's many, 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 many years since I was a little kid, and I've started out with animals, being the Dr. Doolittle of the neighborhood with pretty much any animal, including a baby skunk. Thankfully, I didn't get skunked. Is health first. So check to make sure your dog is okay. If he's in good weight, does he have pain if he's exhibiting a bad behavior? Is he perhaps not absorbing nutrients? Does he need something? Does he need some kind of a medication because he's got worms? And that's why he's hungry. There are so many reasons. And those are the reasons why I say, let's start out with visiting your veterinarian. Tell your veterinarian what is going on and ask either, if he feels that there's something, you can ask for, on the younger dogs, something called a junior panel. On older dogs, there's a senior panel. It's basically blood work and testing. It's not very expensive. It's maybe a few hundred dollars, which can be expensive. Some areas, it might be $100. Talk to your veterinarian. Make sure that your animal's healthy. Make sure he doesn't have a problem with his kidneys or his liver. Make sure he's absorbing things properly. Make sure he doesn't have worms. Have a fecal exam. Some dogs get a urinary tract infection. They can get nasty, just like people can. Certain medications your dog may be on may not be good. He may be getting hair loss, alopecia, because he's got one of these topical, anti-flea tick preventative, right? He may have that. He may have a problem. He may have an allergy to that. He may be eating dirt, not because he's hungry, but because he's not absorbing nutrients, which a supplement like NuVet will help you with. But all I'm saying is start out talking to, at least, or visiting your veterinarian if you have anything that appears to be a behavioral issue or even a training issue. Because very often the dog will have something going on that is the precursor or the antecedent, which is the technical word, the antecedent for that behavior. So in other words, something may be causing that. Let's check that out physically. That should always be your first line of defense. Now, once you went to your veterinarian, your vet says, yeah, your dog is fine, everything looks good, then you can start out. And this is where you confer or consult with your local dog trainer. And an obedience trainer. And I would ask somebody let me know. I want to see what kind of things have you worked with in the past. what kind of breeds. Most people, and I do and don't believe in certifications, because I've seen some people who are absolutely incredible who have no certifications at all, because anecdotally, it is pretty easy, if you're somewhat perceptive person, for you to be able to make a difference in a dog. But when you see, you know, a 20-year-old who says, positive reinforcement all the way, and looks like she's, you know, had helium gas that she's been sucking on, and, you know, is sitting there with like, oh, I only believe in this. Those are the people you want to stay away from. And the reason I'm saying that is those people are like the Kool-Aid drinkers. So they go, oh, this is going to work. But they don't have enough experience. So they've only worked with puppies. Now, that's fine if you have a golden retriever puppy who has no behavioral issues. You can go to, you know, the happy, happy lady, you know, who's probably on something. You can go to her. Don't give her your dog to take, but talk to her, talk to them first. Go to one of the box stores. Believe it or not, we have a couple of, you know, different stores, the box stores, the big ones, the pet stores that have the big names. And some of them have some decent trainers. As a matter of fact, I have 14 in New Jersey of these stores who refer to me for behavioral issues. So guess what? They are awesome because they realize the difference. They know enough to know that, uh-oh, this is something that's way out of my skill set. This dog is growling at their toddler. I'm not doing that. And they call me, and I get a lot of referrals from situations and people like that. I get a lot of referrals from veterinarians who have seen my work for, you know, decades. So I won't even take, if you called me and said, I got a golden puppy, can you help me? No, you don't need me. Why would you want me to come to help you with your golden puppy? Because 8 out of 10 chance, that you're going to go to your local box store and that kid there is going to be able to help you with no problem and a lot less time involved. Yes, your dog might get a little pudgy, but so be it. But you want to always check and ask people, what breeds have you worked with? Tell me about 3 or 4 of the cases you've worked with. And if they go, oh, well, I work with puppies and I do this and I train them to sit, tell me about a specific puppy. Tell me, you don't have to give me the person's name. Give me the puppy's name. Tell me how the dog started and tell me how you were able to make it, you know, sit or lie down or whatever. How were you able to change it? And, you know, stand there and observe. Don't let somebody take your dog that who you don't know. I've seen so many horror stories on all these pet care websites. Crazy things from people who just had terrible experiences that to downright horrible, where there was that poor pit bull that the woman had told the, you know, pet sitter on one of the big apps had told him, don't let my dog near other dogs. She's not good with other dogs. And the guy said, oh, no, I won't do that. And, you know, pay me extra and I won't have any other animals. And the guy lied. The dog wound up, growling at the other dogs that the guy had there that he shouldn't have had there or shouldn't have accepted the lady as a client. And long story short, the guy killed her dog, shot the dog. You can look this up, Google it. Shot the dog, killed the dog, and then wrote her an obnoxious text about where she could come pick up her dead dog. Yes, I have heard not quite that barbaric, but I have seen horrible things. People using shock collars on dogs when they said they wouldn't. People kicking dogs. People being abusive to animals. It's out there. You just don't know. Some people can be very good at being two-faced and, you know, really saying that they're going to be good with the dog, but not. You should never, ever, ever have to raise your voice to a dog. You shouldn't really even have to talk to the dog. But you should certainly never stoop to the fact that you are, you know, just maybe incompetent or lacking knowledge in that particular area and being incompetent in that area. If you get to that point where you say, you know, I have to do something more because I don't know what to do, that's not a time to experiment on somebody's pet because that could have been their child. You don't experiment on living things like that. That's just wrong. That's where you have to man up or a woman up and just say, you know what? I'm sorry, ma'am. This is out of my skill set. I think I'm going to refer you to, you know, a behaviorist because this is just not my wheelhouse. Same as my wheelhouse, although I do it because I've had so many, you know, literally hundreds of my own dogs through the years, I know, and having trained all the service dogs and therapy dogs and companion dogs, you know, thousands of them, I know puppies because I've raised litters of puppies, litters and litters and litters of puppies, even for rescues and shelters, that I've fostered entire litters of, you know, pits or you know, whatever mixes plus my own breed. So I know that, but you know what? I don't need to help you do that. I do that for myself. I don't need to be in a local dog trainer who's, you know, doing that and helping you. There are a lot of, especially younger people who are just starting out, and don't pay the prices you'd pay for a behaviorist for your local dog trainer. Ask them how much they charge, what is it based on, you know, if you have a problem, can you call them, those kind of things. And this is, so we first go to our veterinarian, we second, we're going to try some positive reinforcement from, you know, a local dog trainer. You're going to kind of interview them a bit to make sure that they actually understand and have mastered some skills. So you're going to get a little bit of a background from them. You know, ask for references. You know, maybe you don't have to do that with somebody like me who's been around forever because everybody pretty much knows what I do. But, you know, young people or new people starting out, new doesn't mean bad. New just means you've got to make sure that they have experience with your situation, right? So let's say you have somebody who, you know, deals with aggression, right? Well, that's great, but if they're an obedience trainer dealing with aggression, you really aren't an obedience trainer if you're dealing with aggression. That's not right. So I'd be running from that person. What I would be doing is asking people, be very honest with me. Tell me, what are you comfortable with? Because if somebody walks into your Cane Corso or your, you know, Roddy who's got issues and they're afraid of that dog and they just want money because they can't get customers, you don't want your dog and you to be, you know, falling prey to that, because even if they only charge you $30 an hour, it's the damage that they can do if they don't know what to do. It's like going to a surgeon who really doesn't have experience with something, and they do a bad job on repairing your leg, your ankle, let's say. And so now, because they weren't good at ankles, they were just a plastic surgery, they didn't do orthopedics, they mess up your ankle. Well, now you got to go to an expert. You got to go to an expert's expert to get that fixed. So that's what I'm saying. Start out with your basics, your, you know, basic obedience, your, you know, basic, you know, treats, quid pro quo. That's fine after you know, your veterinarian gives you a clean bill of health. After the break, we are going to talk about the difference between obedience trainer, a behavioral expert, and we're going to talk even about some of the things and what's involved with it. We will be right back. Stay tuned. And welcome back to our show. We are here to continue on with the next in line, which is behavioral correction. So we talked about going to your vet first, trying your local dog trainer with operant conditioning, positive reinforcement, okay? After that, when you know you've got a behavioral issue, now you're not looking for your local dog trainer. You're not looking for a dog trainer. You're looking for a behaviorist. A lot of times, your local veterinarian would be very helpful. Somebody like I was explaining earlier, you know, I get tons of referrals. I have over 500 vet clinics that our practice is involved with, and I get referrals from a lot of different people. But I tend to see it's usually the same 20 or 30 veterinarians who refer, because those are the particularly difficult cases, and because the people now, when they go back with their pet, don't have the red sticker on the folder. If any of you have ever seen a bright red sticker on your folder on the corner near where your name is, or if you're overlooking the veterinarian or the tech inputting things and you see a red flag on there, that means your dog is aggressive, or they're afraid of your dog because your dog is exhibiting behaviors they're not comfortable with. If you're at that point, you certainly should have somebody call me or call a good behaviorist, not a trainer, a behaviorist. Behavioral correction, there are a lot of different ways of doing it. There are different kinds of training that kind of extend a little bit into that, where you remove positives or you add a negative, but you decide you're adding the negative, but it's a very mild negative. But those are not decisions that a local trainer should make. Those are decisions that a behaviorist should make. Behaviorists, 99.9% of the time, will not use food as a reward. It's not a reward. It's a reinforcement. There's a difference. Giving quid pro quo, okay, you do this with your paw and I will give you a bribe, that's obedience or offering conditioning. There's a reward. It's called positive reinforcement. There's nothing wrong with it, but not when we get to this point. When you get to that point, and it's not about shock collars, because we should never intimidate or evoke fear or any kind of negativity from an animal, because right away they're not going to want to work, and you're going to put them on the defensive, and you're going to have much more of a chance of either getting growled at, snapped at, bitten, or seriously hurt. So leave this for the big boys, okay? Don't do the baby stuff with a dog who's already told you and shown you that it has issues that are much more than you or your local trainer can handle. So when you're correcting, remember, when you have a dog who doesn't trust, if you have a dog who maybe came from a rescue situation or shelter, or maybe has some chemical or physiological issues that, you know, are causing that behavior, or nutritional issues like we talked about earlier, those dogs need somebody who has worked with multiple dogs, not one, multiple, hundreds of dogs. That's what I look for. I would look for, if I were you, I want somebody who, when they call, goes, oh, yeah, I've dealt with this kind of thing before. It'll be okay, because, you know, we're going to all work together. So let me explain that. When you consult, which is your fourth thing, when you actually make your appointment for a behaviorist, that's when you start thinking about, all right, what are the things that I am capable as a human of doing? It's not always about the dog, because I've had so many rescues through the years. Like, I can think of probably at least 20 or 30 dogs right off the bat that were so bad that even though I fixed them, they're probably, you know, a couple of them are in sanctuaries, different things. But a couple of them I can remember saying, what are we going to do? Yes, can I fix it? Yes. And do we have someone who's committed at the shelter? Yes. I remember this one guy, Ricky, with this really, really nice dog. It was a pit, but he was attacking everything. You couldn't get near him. Ricky and I were the only two people. Ricky, he loved me. He decided, because I wasn't a threat and I wasn't tossing cookies or staring at him, he decided I was nice. So he wound up actually being adopted by the young man who had gained his trust. But what you have to remember here is that you are not me and you are not Ricky. You have to be very honest with yourself when you have a behavioral issue, whether you created it, you adopted it, or it just happened. You know, nature is funny like that. There is such a thing as bad dogs. People say there aren't. Well, you just have to, again, consider the extent of the expert's knowledge. Yes, there are some dogs that are just dangerous. And I'm not talking breeds. I'm talking individuals, because we shouldn't lump everybody together. But if you have a dog in your shelter or your rescue, and that dog is bad, well, and I'm saying bad, badly behaved, and has that kind of severity to it or intensity, even if we can fix it, where is that animal going to go? Who are you going to adopt it out to? How can you adopt that dog out? And that's where you start getting into, you got to rely on your vet and you got to rely on your expert. Now, I'm not saying that vets should make the decision about that, because most veterinarians don't have any kind of background in behavior. I know this because I've spoken with everybody. I mean, I spoke with hundreds and hundreds of vets through the years. And they'll say, you know, sometimes I look at it, and if the dog is growling at a person, I say, that's too much. But it's not too much necessarily, because a skilled behaviorist can fix that or can at least manage that behavior with you. But if you have a dog who is not lucky enough to have a committed owner, a person who wants that animal to make it, you're basically saying, okay, this animal's going to stay in jail for the rest of its life till it passes away or gets ill or does something so egregious that we're going to have to euthanize it. So you really have to think of it as there's stages to things. So if you've already consulted your vet, you've gone to your local dog trainer, you've thought about other types of behavioral correction, now you're at a behaviorist, a local really, really good person, or maybe somebody who's not local who comes to you or you go to them. Now, all of a sudden, we have some different choices. You can try with your veterinarian to discuss, and sometimes we'll do this either with a behavioral vet or with a neurologist, like a good neurological vet who has experience. We have several people who are amazing and we love and we go to, and they have, the one especially has saved a lot of dogs. And what we do when you're looking at medications, these are not started with Prozac. If your vet says, okay, let's try Prozac, that is not necessarily the first line of defense. You want your vet to do a little bit of research into it, call other behavioral vets or call neurologists, neurosurgeons, because they know what the chemistry of the brain is. You want to make sure that the medications that you're giving are going to be the least first, and then the most would be the last. So it's basically like thinking about if you were giving a correction. First, you might, you know, kind of just take the item away. Second, you might, you know, say the word no, taking the item away. Third, you might, you know, take something else away or raise your voice a little bit and be more firm, like no. There's stages of things, right? Well, medications, there are phases and stages also. So don't always, when your vet says, you know, a particular thing, don't just say, oh, okay. You can ask them. And if you have a vet that won't answer your questions, that's probably not the right vet for you. Make sure you have a good working relationship with your veterinarian. So you can tell your vet, can you do a little research, see what else is out there? Because there are so many medications. There's Pexion, there's clomipramine, there's people you can use, there's like doggy Elavil. There are, you know, of course, there's fluoxetine, which is Prozac. There's gabapentin. There's trazodone. There is acepromazine. There are so many things that you can use. But medications, unless it's for a physical condition, like something, you know, like for diabetes, you might need insulin. We always look for those medications to be temporary. Could be temporary weeks, could be temporary months, could be temporary years. But you can't just medicate a dog. You have to also have some kind of behavioral plan. So your vet giving you medication for your dog isn't going to change your dog because the behaviors are already in existence. So that's where I get into my next part, the human commitment. If you are not ready and committed to your pet to do whatever is needed, whatever your behaviorist states and your vet concurs with, then you might not be the right family for that dog. Now, I'm not saying to get rid of the dog because I believe rehoming is the absolute, absolute last option that we should ever explore. But if you have two little kids and your dog is getting a little aggressive around your kids or has maybe even done something already, and if you say to me when I say, what's our exit strategy? And they say, Janice, our exit strategy is I got to put my kids first and I'll have to get rid of the dog. I don't even want to deal with those people. Not that I don't want to deal with them because I don't like them or I don't want to help them, but I don't need to give them behavioral modification plans and spend all of my time, which is very limited, with that situation because they've already said you have to listen to your patient. You have to listen to your client. They've already said, I'm overwhelmed. I have two little kids. It may be the husband or the mother-in-law or somebody who's saying, you're putting your dog above your kids. I just want to know going into it, are we trying to win this game or not? Because if our exit strategy, which you've already thought about, is giving the dog up, that's a viable option. You're not quitting. It's okay if that's what you have to do. And nobody should be trying to shame you on social media and telling you you're giving up. I get it. But you have to know as a professional that person isn't going to be, not that they're not committed, but they're not capable at that point. They're overwhelmed. And what is their energy going to be in correcting the animal? How are you going to have that person who's already overworked, overwrought, overwhelmed, how are they going to have a calm, confident, and good demeanor and energy and not be exhausted, and then they're going to be able to work with the dog too? It's not fair. So those are the situations where you can ask maybe someone in the family, or somebody can, you know, keep the dog for a little while just till the family isn't as overwhelmed and going through what they're going through. But the human commitment, you have to explain, if you're a professional, if you're a behaviorist, or if you're a local dog trainer or somewhere in between, or think you're one instead of the other, you have to be honest with yourself, but you have to be honest with the family. It does take a little bit of work. It's not always a lot. Certainly what I do with behavior takes a lot less than, you know, 45 minutes of, you know, training the dog every day. I don't have time for that. I have too many dogs. I don't have enough hours in the day if I have to spend 45 minutes a day or an hour a day training my dog. My dogs are not trained. They're just super well behaved. They don't bite people. They don't do bad things. They don't hurt people. They don't steal stuff. They don't, you know, soil in the house. They don't bark unless somebody's showing up at my front door, which is what I pay them to do, and that's their only job. You know, so you have to look at it as, if the humans are not capable of committing to it, don't judge them, help them. And if you have an issue like that, that's where you start contacting breed rescues or mixed breed rescues or all breed rescues versus a shelter. I never recommend for anybody to bring a dog to a shelter, even the good shelters. It's still a shelter situation. If your dog's having issues one place, you bring them to a shelter, I guarantee they're going to have more issues. So have the commitment to the animal, at least that human commitment, that you start saying, okay, I'm going to find a better situation for my animal. And then the last thing, if there's no other way that you can handle it, then rehoming. Rehoming is not dumping them in a shelter. Rehoming is doing everything you can on social media, on whatever platforms, checking out the people, checking out their veterinary reference, checking out a minimum of 2 to 3 personal references, going to their home, making sure you like the people, as if you were dropping your child off for babysitting. You wouldn't just say, oh, I saw this thing online. And be very, very wary of, depending on where you live, of people who might want that dog of yours to turn it into bait dog. Because unfortunately, there are evil people out there. So that's something that you guys, that's what you owe your dog. You owe your animal that commitment from the start when you got them to the moment that you either hand them off to somebody competent and kind, or that animal passes away. And that is unfortunately the end of our show today. We are so grateful to be here again. Have a wonderful, beautiful, fantastic weekend. Have a fantastic Memorial Day, which is coming up. And next week, we're going to talk about all that with fireworks and all over again. Have a great week. God bless.